through with you guys. All the different components as far as inputting, keyboard, mice. Wait, you guys know the difference between a mice and a mouse? Huh? Plural? Yeah, pretty much. Yeah, just one is plural, that's all. So I want to make sure you guys understand. Once you guys get confused. All right. You never heard it called a mice? I use mice all the time.
I bet you do.
All right. So touch screens, fingerprint readers. Those are all different ways we input. Processing, we use a CPU, GPU graphics. Output, we said monitors, printers, speakers, headphones. And storage, we said CDs, DVD, disk drives, USB flash drives, hard drives, all fall under there. And, oh, forgot, communication, modems, network, routers, different ways that we allow our computers to actually communicate. But those are physical things that we can actually touch. All right. And it just kind of shows us visually some of those examples of everything we just talked about. So software is kind of like the opposite of hardware. So software are applications that basically tell the hardware what to do. They're instructions that tell the hardware what to do. And software are things that we cannot touch. We can't physically touch these things, right? So when you think about like your operating system, you can't physically like touch your operating system. It's a program installed on your computer, but you can't physically do anything to it or with it. Software instructions used to tell the hardware what to do. So, say you're using your mouse, you're using your keyboard, you're using all these different things, there's all software associated with this hardware devices that you're using. By itself, it doesn't work. Hardware has to be associated with some type of software in order for it to be connected and work with your computer. All right. You guys know what the operating system is? You guys all heard the term? No? Okay. So the operating system is basically like the main system for your computer. It's basically what controls it, is what does everything. Every computer, by our definition, has some type of operating system. As we were talking about like the watches and the printer, like all of those devices have some type of operating system. It may not be the same one that we use in our computer, but it has some type of operating system in order for it to function. Every computer has an operating system. So in our computers that we're using like here and in our labs, the operating system is Windows. So it's Windows 10, which is the latest one. The three major operating systems are Windows. Anybody know the other two? Mac is another one. And Linux. Those are the three major operating systems that you would hear or that people have or use. Windows, which is very common, a lot of devices are Windows, and then Mac, which is, you know, it's Mac, top of the line. They're expensive, but they are great. And then the other one is Linux. So you can install a Linux operating system on your computer. Linux is an open source, meaning it's free. You can just download it and you can install it on your computer. And the cool thing about Linux is you can customize it. You can have it look or run however you want it to run. You have that ability to be able to change or customize it. With Mac, there is no changing or customizing how the operating system works. Versus Windows, you can kind of customize a little bit. But with Linux, you have like full control to do pretty much whatever you want to do. So those are three major operating systems. And the boot process is basically when you hit the start button on your computer and it starts to boot by loading your operating system and your memory into the RAM. That's the boot process. It loads everything that's going to be used to start up. It loads it into your RAM. While you're using your computer, everything that you're doing gets uploaded into RAM, which is why they tell you a lot of times if your computer is running slow, you probably need to add more RAM because it can't handle everything that you're trying to do. All right, and we'll there's another chapter that kind of deals with processing how things work, but just want to throw that out. It just shows example of a Windows desktop, which you guys have all seen, should be familiar with. Application software, pretty self-explanatory. You guys all have apps on your phones that you use, right? It's the same way, but we're talking about apps for our computer, our devices. We download things. We download Office, Excel. Those are all different apps that we use. The thing to remember with applications is they are for a specific purpose, right? So we don't download applications to run our computer. Like, our computer will work fine without applications, but we use them because they allow us to do specific things, right? So we download Microsoft Word to be able to write documents, right? Would our computer work without Microsoft Word? Right, it'll work just fine, it's no problem. But we download this application for the specific purpose of being able to write documents and create things. All right, so that's application software. The thing to remember, specific task or purpose. All right. And it talks about some of the different apps. Are any gamers in here? Like online gamers? What do you play?
Battlefield 4.
Battlefield 4?
Yeah, okay.
PS3. Wait, PS3?
No, right?
Okay. Yeah. PS3. There's other people on there? Still?
Yeah.
Okay. Just making sure it's still a community. Sean.
Yeah.
CSGO?
Oh, PC.
Yeah. All right. I gotta add you on Steam, man. Get it in. Yeah, so I do game a little bit in my spare time when I do have it. But it just depends on how much time I have. It's not a lot. So we'll skip that. So let's see if we can do this real quick. True or false? Microsoft Windows is an example of an operating system. What would you guys say?
False.
True, you say false? Okay. Most of you guys are...
True.
You can't change it, Henry. False. This is part of your grade right here, man. All right. And then number two, speakers are an example of a...
Output.
All right. So it's output. They are hardware, but associated kind of with the five components. Can be considered output. And that is true. Microsoft Windows is an operating system. All right. Any questions there? No? All right, cool. So I'm going to have to skip around a little bit just because I know I'm not going to make it through the whole chapter. But this is like partly on you guys too to finish reading the rest of this chapter, whatever I don't cover. So it talks about the six categories of computers. And basically what this defines is like we know the technical definition of a computer. And now this kind of just categorizes what type of computer they actually fall into. So we have embedded computers. What does the word embed mean?
Immersed.
Inside, immersed. So we're talking about computers placed inside of things. All right. So embedded computers are like little computers, tiny computers placed inside of things. All right. Mobile devices, we know what that is. I'm not going to go through that. Personal computers, PCs, we know what that is. Server, I'll go over that. Mainframe, I'm not going to go over that just because people don't use those anymore. And then supercomputers, I'll go over that. All right. But these are the six categories of how computers are kind of defined and what they fall into. And this can be based off of like price. It can be based off of size. It can be based off of speed. There's different categories, and things are not so easily defined. So something may fall into both categories, or people may look at it in two different ways. The common thing that people are trying to still kind of define is a tablet or iPad. Like, what is it? Is it a mobile device, or is it like a laptop? What would you guys say?
Nowadays,
it's like a laptop.
Yeah.
Nowadays, like a laptop?
Because you can buy a keyboard to it, and then you could...
So, it can kind of be both, right? It just depends on how you look at it, maybe how you use it. Mm-hmm. But like typically the term laptop is associated with a device that kind of closes, opens, and has a keyboard. But this doesn't necessarily come with a keyboard, so that's why some people would look at it as a mobile device.
But you can buy it.
But you can buy it, yeah. But this, like the laptop is like attached to it, like that keyboard. And I know there are some with the cases that basically attaches it, which is fine. It's just, like I say, it really just depends on how you look at it. But it's not just like everybody sees an iPad and just says, oh, that's a laptop. Or everybody sees them like, oh, that's a mobile device because it doesn't have a keyboard. It can kind of fall into different ranges based off of how you see it, based off of how you look at it. So let's look at this real quick. Embedded computers, like I say, computers placed inside of things, devices, talks about thermostats. They have a computer in there which allow you to be able to do a lot of things. Treadmills, answering machine, cars, self-driving cars. How do you guys feel about self-driving cars? Not this one particularly because that's a terrible one. But how do you guys feel about self-driving cars? Scared?
What if like something technical goes wrong and crashes?
What if something technical goes wrong? That definitely can happen. And then I would ask you, what if something technically goes wrong with your car that you're controlling now? I get it. And it's different because it's like, you know, kind of out of your control in a sense. But then in the same way, like you can be driving and something out of your control can happen, which you wouldn't be able to do much either. If that kind of makes sense. Yeah. And so like, but I still understand the hesitation and the fear of the self-driving car. I do understand. No?
Nope.
Look at these damn Teslas. And people in there and they on self-driving mode. Can't approach. So one without a person? Oh, no.
No? Okay.
I'm good.
I get it. I understand. I do believe though that a lot of cars are heading in that direction to have kind of that self-driving mode, just to have this kind of community to where, you know, you have like every car in a sense being controlled and locked in with one another. And I know it sounds weird because, like I say, there have been accidents with Tesla and things where they, you know, hit people, ran into people. But in the same way, like there's people on the road running into people and hitting people like every day.
That's why I think it's just, I'm with progression,
mm-hmm.
but just like you said, we control the vehicles and can do the same thing that's happening with the ones that are controlling themselves.
Right.
Why would you just, that's, to me in my mind, it's just making the problem worse.
Yeah, and if you compare the numbers, I guarantee you the rate that humans driving behind the wheel have like caused accidents versus computers, the human side is a lot higher.
Yeah.
I can guarantee you that.
Well, all your planes are computer generated. I mean, Mr. Boeing was on the airway yesterday explaining the problem and apologizing. A lot of people use planes that are computer generated.
Yeah, like pilots, like, I mean, they're there, they're in the cockpit, but they're not like staring, they're not really doing that anymore. Like, they set it and, you know, they can take over when they need to, but a lot of times they're just kind of.
It's like something, they just in there chilling.
Just in there chilling. Like, literally. Like, if they wanted to, they can come back and sit back there with you guys and, you know. Yeah, and the plane will pretty much fly itself.
I feel like that's not all true because like the crash that happened with the Boeing 747, the pilots were trying to control it, but the system kept, like, there was like a glitch in the system where the plane was like, it was like within 10 seconds of them pushing it up, it would glitch because one of the things was broken.
Gotcha.
So not always the case.
It's not always, but in most cases, like, they're not actively, like, flying the plane the whole ride.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. They're, like, they, you know, they got it take off, and once they get to that altitude where they can just kind of cruise, like, they're not actually flying it. They're just chilling. Yeah. You had your...
Well, I was going to say that, like, it's not really technology that's the problem. It's the fact that it's, you know,
already found out like their problems early on. They already fixed everything. So like it's safer because, you know, they solve it. When you have something new, you don't know what's wrong with it. So like you have more, like you have a higher chance of crashing like a new plane versus like an old plane, and that applies to like everything, like cars also.
Definitely. And I can understand that because new technology needs to be kind of tested and worked out. There are some things that you can test for and you can account for, but it's not until you actually gets into place to where things, like you figure out new things that you need to be changed or need to be adjusted. And I can definitely agree and understand that. My thing with self-driving cars, I think they're cool.
You own a Tesla?
I don't own a Tesla. I can't afford one. But they are nice cars, and I would definitely, if I could have one, I probably would. I'm cool. I'm okay with the self-driving like feature. As long as people, in a sense, are like there, kind of alert to be able to, you know, kind of step in if they need to be. I seen stories of people like sleep behind the wheel and stuff like that. And that, to me, that's just like kind of almost careless in a sense. And I get it, like the system is supposed to be able to run efficiently without the person. But at this early stage, I don't feel like that should be done, you know, just yet. You know, once we, you know, had this in place for like, you know, 5, 7, 10 years, then once we have a sustained system, then maybe I can get that put in the bed in your backseat of your car and then going to sleep. Because you know it's going to work, right? But anybody have a self-driving car in here? That's sun-like, you know? All right, so mobile devices. I'm not going to go through that. You guys know what that is. Talks about the trend of Apple Watch. Don't worry about that. Talks about this smartphone driver's license, and it's just kind of talking about like a trend, something that's new. They're talking about trying to have basically digital driver's license, so like it's on your phone, on your devices, so that if something happens, that's like your actual current form of ID. And so there's some good things about it. There's some bad things about it. The good thing about it is you would pretty much always have it, right? Because we pretty much always carry our phones, our devices. And we would pretty much have it everywhere we go. We wouldn't have to worry about trying to, you know, lose it, trying to find it if it's lost. Like my wife, she has like a bunch of different purses. And then she has like a little purse that she throws inside of her bigger purses. And so she's just constantly like, oh, I can't find my wallet. And I'm like, well, what purse is it in? She's like, oh, I don't know. I wore this. And it's just like, okay, and then we find that purse, but the little purse is not in there with the ID. And then it's just like, you know, this is, yeah. So if there's like a digital ID that she can have on her phone, like she always has her phone, but she loses like a little wallet inside of the big purses. And so like that, in that case, like it would be nice. Traveling through the airport, one time we were flying out and she forgot the little wallet inside of another purse, and we get inside, she looks in her purse and it's not there. And so we're trying to figure out if we can, you know, still fly, and just getting through there. They have to do all these searches and tests and just a big hassle. It would have been nice to be able to pull out, you know, our phones.
You don't have clear?
Nah, can't afford that.
It's not that expensive.
What's clear? Clear is like, basically you pay like, was it once a year or something?
Yeah. And then, you know, they check your retina and you just go through the line. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
I'll try it tomorrow and let you know how it works.
Okay. And if you want to sponsor me for it, I can give you my PayPal.
Work something out. We can really.
I give you my PayPal and but yeah. So, in cases like that, I feel like it's nice to have this digital copy. But then there are some cases where you feel like, you know, what if your phone dies, right? And you get pulled over, and you're trying to verify who you are, and your phone is dead. Then, you know, it probably turns into the process of, okay, we got chargers at the station. We'll just take you down there. You ride in the back seat, we'll take you down there and
charge your phone.
Charge your phone and you prove who you are, and then hopefully you're good to go. But that can be an issue, right? If somebody can't prove who they are, can't prove their driver's license. So I get the hesitation. I also feel like this would be like a nice backup. to have. So let's say you don't have your car. If you have this as a backup, it works kind of nice in that situation. So you're not totally dependent on technology, but you're using it as kind of like a backup resource. I feel like it'll work good.
I feel like this would be a new venture for the black market as well, though.
Oh, damn.
Black market?
Yeah, for sure. So like
Photoshop and...
Hacker's paradise right here.
I get that. But I mean, they're doing that now in a sense without the digital.
Physical.
So I feel like... I mean, it might be more. It might take off in to a whole nother level, but I don't feel like it's too much more of a threat. Especially if there's like a biometric feature that goes along with it. So like you have to scan your fingerprint or like facial recognition before it actually opens up or use it. I feel like that adds another layer that may prevent that. So is there another hand over here? No? Okay. Okay, so let's keep going. PCs stands for personal computer, which is a small design to be used by one person, originally called microcomputer. So those are the same thing, personal computer, microcomputer. And the reason they call it micro is because, like I say, computers back in the day were like really huge. And so to have something like this, that it still kind of looks big, but it's really small compared to what was before it, like this really huge computer. And so they were called microcomputers, and now they're just called kind of personal. And so desktop computers, they sit on the desk. Okay. And then they have these different categories of personal computers. Laptop, tablet, hybrid notebook. You guys know what those are? The hybrid notebooks. Like the Surface Pro. The ones that basically you can use. They have a keyboard attached to it. But in a sense, it kind of like folds back. So if you have like a keyboard on the side, it like folds back. So you can use it as a tablet or you can use it like as a laptop with the keyboard. So that's the hybrid one. And then netbooks, nobody really uses those anymore. Those are like really small laptops that people used to use. They just like had a really great battery. They lasted all day, but you can do like simple stuff with them. A lot of people like read. Yeah, but nobody really uses those anymore. So just kind of show an example of the hybrid, the tablet, notebook, which are there. How much time? We're out of here. 30 minutes. Okay. So a thin client. This goes along with kind of like a server in a sense. The thin client basically access the data, the information that's coming from the server itself. So let me show you this picture real quick. Okay. So in this slide here, it talks about the server, and it kind of ties into like the thin client. And another name for a thin client is called a dumb terminal. Why they chose that name, I don't know, but that's just what it's called, dumb terminal. But what it is you can see this this nurse here in the dentist's office. She's accessing data and records based off of this customer, and they're all coming from this server here. So this server is kept somewhere totally different. It's kept like in a closet or in a storage room or in a like contained room. This is not in the actual physical room that she's in. But she's able to access the information and all the data because everything that's within this office is stored on this server here. So this server is locked away, kept in a secure place, environment, room, and she's able to access it through the thin client, which is basically this screen, monitor, and mouse. So that's basically what the thin client is. It's like the screen, the monitor, keyboard, the mouse that she's using, which is connected to this server. But this server is not in the same physical location. This is somewhere totally different. All right, so it's like if you had a, let's say you had a server at your house. Let's say you have this big, like 10 bedroom house, right? So let's say you have the server in, let me see, this is my house and this is like a, I know it's a weird layout, but just, like art was like my second major. So you'll be able to see it in a minute. And so that's another room. So this is a 10-bedroom house. I know it's a weird design, but like I'm, like I don't think like normal people. I think different. So let's say we have this 10-bedroom house, right? And we have our server. We'll lock it in here, right? So this is where our service is kept. It's in a secure room there. All right, but let's say we had computers. So that's like a computer. And then that's a computer. That's a computer. And so those are our computers. So let's say, like, for these rooms, like, you don't have a physical, like, actual, like, desktop or system unit, like the big box. All you have is like a screen, keyboard, and mouse. Like that's all you have in these rooms that have computers. You just have a screen, keyboard, and mouse. You don't have the physical actual like system unit or main unit. You guys know what?
The tower?
The tower. You guys know what that looks like? It's a server. Do I have it in any? So, like in this slide here, you see like the tower next to the monitor? So like this here? Mm-hmm. Like you don't have that. In the room, all you have is this, this, and this. That's all you have. And it's connected to the server. Like it can be wirelessly or it can be wired. Typically wired is better. It's more secure. But it can be wirelessly also, right?
Is that all wireless besides the monitor that probably gets connected to a power outlet?
Say that one more time.
Is that all wireless, like wireless mouse, wireless keyboard?
It can be. It doesn't matter. It can be wired or it can be wireless. But yeah, so with that, like there's no tower in these rooms. So like you only need one computer, one server. And all the programs, all the applications that you want to use, they're kept and they're installed on this one server. And all these other devices, all these other computers will have access to this server, like through a wireless connection. And so in these rooms are basically just thin clients, which is just the screen, keyboard, and the monitor.
In the server room, is that where the rack is with the fiber optic cables going through it? That's what I'm picturing right now. It's like a rack with like a bunch of lights and like these slots for.
So that's more on the mainframe side of things. I don't have a good picture of it.
Yeah, something like that.
So that's not what we're dealing with. Yeah. The server actually looks like a tower. It's just a different type of tower.
Okay.
I have a question. So, yep. Like for the server, that's where you get like internet and stuff like that, like Wi-Fi.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, you'll have your router, your modem connected to the server.
And then you can also like plug in like a wire, right, and like connect it to the computer through the server.
You could, yes. If you wanted to do a wire connection, like from different rooms, yeah, you could do that.
Because I remember I used to do that with like my Xbox to get like. Internet, like to get online, you have to connect it. What is that wire thing called?
The Cat5.
Yeah. So that's connected to like your router, your modem.
Okay.
And then from there, you get internet access to those other places.
So like, let's say you were to hack a company's server.
Mm-hmm.
Are there like different levels of like let's say like they like are there different levels you have? Like, do you have to go so far and break certain, like, barriers and stuff to get certain information, or is it just all stored?
It all depends on how they store it on their server. So a better, smarter company would kind of segregate things so that if someone does, for some reason, like, break into their server, they would still need, like, other clearances, other codes, other passwords, things like that to get information that's actually of value. Instead of just being able to have like everything within one access to the server. So it would be like, let's say this building here, right? The NBA building. Let's say there were no doors on any classrooms or everything was just open, right? There was only a lock at the front door here. Like, that would be like to where you gain access to a server and then everything else is just open to you, right? But we have doors and locks, so if even if you get in the building, like you break into the building, you still have to work to get into classrooms and other things like that because everything is kind of closed off. And so that's how more smarter companies and smarter people will do it. They'll make it everything separate so that even if you do get in, like there's still a lot more you have to do to get information. But yeah, so like I said, my reason for showing you this was like just showing you like in here, in these rooms will be thin clients or called dump terminals. And they're accessing all their information, all the programs, all the data is all kept on one server in another place, in another location. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I have a question.
Yep.
When I was in my online program, I know that sometimes we have a problem with the computer, you can access the university, online.
Mm-hmm.
They can control your computer from their office. You can just call a number, they control.
If you give them remote access to it, yes.
Yeah. How is that done? Is that the same thing you're talking about?
So that's basically through the internet. Through a network server, they basically go in, and once you click on their remote access to, they basically get your IP address. And with your IP address and you connecting to the same site, they're now able to kind of take control over your computer. But that's why they tell you to like click on, like open up a browser and type in like 192s. Yeah, that's all just your IP address. So they think they can connect to it and then have control over your computer. Yeah. It's a little different. Yeah.
So how are people able to access your laptop and see you through your camera without you giving them that IP address?
There's
most
other
people now with the laptop, they put a little piece of tape over the monitor.
Mm-hmm.
And they order the camera.
Right. And so that's good practice to do. Just in case somebody does gain access to your computer or your laptop, they're not able to see like everything that's going on, like in your room, especially if you keep your laptop, you know, in like your bedroom, things like that. But they're able to do it different ways. Your IP address is not necessarily like hidden. Anytime you come in contact with a website, like there's a trace of your IP address connecting to that website.
Is that through the cookies?
Through the cookies, but just in general, any computer that access any site, it has to have an IP address to access. Like even our mobile devices, when we go on certain sites, our IP address from our mobile device shows that we've connected and we've actually communicated with that site because we're communicating with a server, which the server has all the information on there. And so in order to connect with a server, we need a valid IP address. So they're able to find it different ways. Like I said, you probably went somewhere. Maybe they just kind of tracked you down that way. Or you can kind of broadcast and send out pings to see what pings are actually responsive. And then you can get different IP addresses through there. There's a lot of different ways.
One other question. Is that how bill collectors track you? Because you get these random phone calls all day, people trying to sell. But some of them, they ring, you answer, there's no answer. You call back, it's a disconnected number. So I'm just trying to understand. I get phone calls all day.
Uh-huh.
I get some with sales people trying to sell me something.
Yeah.
But then some numbers, I answer it, and there's nothing near.
Yeah.
Then I call it back, it's a disconnected line. But that phone number just rang.
Right.
So I'm just wondering, is that...
Yeah, I'm not sure how the phone system works and how all the marketers do it necessarily.
Maybe through a computer that they're using, like a robocall computer,
mm-hmm.
that is randomly calling everybody. Like example, everybody that took this class,
mm-hmm.
who registered for this class, say there's a company wants to sell us something for the next or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
If we get these emails,
yeah,
we get these phone calls. And they say, if you don't answer the phone call, then there's no way for them to track you back because it's calling randomly until it hits.
I get you.
I'm just wondering, is that some kind of computer that does that?
There can be a program that does that.
An algorithm program that's written.
Yeah.
Okay.
But in a lot of cases, though, it's just them. They got your number some type of way in most cases. Whether it's through another company, because... also, as you're doing business and connecting with other companies, a lot of them will share that data with other people also. So it might be through like a third party where they got your information. And like the way like electronic profiling works is like if you search for something, they're going to take that data and now you kind of fit into this category of this person looking for this item. And so marketers basically take that information and sell it to people who are selling what you're looking for. And then they're going to start calling you.
But their programmers are writing programs that are collecting that whenever you search.
Yeah. So the server keeps track of what people are doing.
Whether you want to or not.
Whether you want to or not. Yes. So it doesn't block everything. It does block some of the things and a lot of the things, but there's some sites like you can't even access, like unless like your cookies are on. And then even still, if you try to cut them off, like once you click something else or do something else, they basically automatically kind of cut back on. It's a kind of a weird way that it works. But like in security, we go over things like that, of how websites do that and how they, you know. What type of phone was it?
It was like, I don't know, it was probably like an iPhone 6S or something. It was actually a lot better than the one I have now. But
what do you have now?
An iPhone 6. Yeah, I don't know, that one's like, it was more fancy or something.
Okay. Yeah. I don't think it's the phone though. I'm not sure exactly what it was. Maybe it's just updated software that, you know, kind of help prevent that thing from happening again. I'm not sure. I can't really give you a straight answer with that. Yeah. Is there any other questions? No? Okay. So the thin client utilizes the network for much of its processing. The advantage of it is lower cost. So kind of like in this example here, we don't have to buy, you know, four different towers. All we need is one server. If we have the one server, then we just have to have a monitor, keyboard, and mouse, which is a lot cheaper than trying to buy, you know, four or five desktop computers. So it definitely saves you a lot of money in that sense, lower cost. And then when you think about like a company, right? So companies run off of servers because everything is a lot cheaper. They don't need to buy, you know, 10 or 12 different desktops. They can just have the server, have the thin clients, and then they're good to go. Also, increased security. And so the security is increased because you're basically just trying to secure the server. If you secure the server, because all the data and information is being stored here, like, you're safe. So if somebody gets access to here, like, that doesn't give them the information that's kept in here, unless they're able to access it through there. But then, like, that's why you want to set it up with, like, you know, credentials and passcodes so that anyone just can't go in here and get everything that's here. So, security, because if you protect the server, then all your data, all your infrastructure is secure. And then easier maintenance also, because if something goes wrong, you know it's the server. So if you fix the server, everything else is going to work the way that it should work. Okay, so a server is a mid-range computer used to host programs or data for a small network. So I'd say this is like a home network in a sense, what we have here. We have our server, which hosts all the programs, all the applications that are distributed throughout the rest of the house or the environment. Don't worry about virtualization. You don't need to know that. But just understand the server. Any questions there? No? Cool. Mainframe, I said we're not going to talk about that. And the reason why is companies don't use mainframes anymore. What most companies do, if they wanted like the power of a mainframe, they just buy a better server. You just buy a more expensive, better server, and you get more functionality than a mainframe computer. All right, so mainframes are really, on a sense, kind of obsolete, to where companies are not buying them, companies not using them, because they took up so much power, they took up so much space inside of a company, like it was just, it wasn't worth it, what you're spending out to maintain this mainframe, than actually just having a better server. Mainframes also had to be kept in like a climate control room where the temperature had to be like really low in order for the computer to still function and run properly. So like I say, most companies are not using those anymore. Our next category is supercomputers, which is the fastest, most expensive, most powerful type of computers. And this is used by a lot of like top researchers, people working in like space, military. They all kind of deal with supercomputers and have access to them. And the way that they run is it's a bunch of computers basically connected together. It's like basically smaller computers connected together. And what they do is they run one program really, really fast. It uses all the processing power that it has to do one function really, really fast. It's not meant or built to like multitask and do like a lot of different things at one time. It's meant to do one thing really, really fast. All the power it has is going to use it to do one task. Once it completes that, then it will go to the next task. But it's not designed to multitask, but to do one thing really, really fast.
Cool. What's that one thing? What are they trying to figure out?
So it depends. Like space, they're like use it to like control things, satellites, things like that. Researchers are using it like to figure out like different algorithms, different numbers. So it's putting all this power into like figuring out this equation or figuring out this algorithm, this number. So that's kind of what it's trying to do. In most cases.
Another example would be like people mining for Bitcoin, right?
Bitcoins, definitely. Yeah. And so people are trying to, like, one way that people were doing it before, like, they were basically taking control of other people's computer, kind of forming their own supercomputer. And what I mean by that is, like, so let's say I get access to your computer, Andy. Mm-hmm. And then from your computer, I get access to Masa's computer. What? Masa? Okay, I get access to Masa's computer. And then from there, I get access to Tyree's computer. So now I have three computers that I can use, like the three of your computers combined to mine for Bitcoins, to search and try and find Bitcoins from other people, other places. But I'm using like all three of your computers kind of combined together to process my computer. And so that's kind of like forming a supercomputer, because basically what a supercomputer is it's a bunch of computers connected together that do one thing really, really fast. And so I'll show you this site here talks about the top 10 most powerful supercomputers. And so this is number 10, the Shaheen 2. And some of them like tell you like kind of what they're used for. This one doesn't really. But this is like for science and technology, right? Number 9, just two European entries. So this is for a university. But like say, this whole device, this whole computer is all connected together to do one thing. There's another one that shows like actual insides of it. This is one is Swiss one. The Trinity, named the original nuclear test conducted, designed for U.S. scientists, predicting and counteracting the spread of nuclear weapons. So that's why this one is used to try to counteract nuclear weapons and things like that. The Mira, where is it? Okay, so like this one, the Sequoia. So you can see, you can't really see. Like all of these different racks and rows and wires, they're all connected to do one thing. So it's a bunch of computers, a bunch of servers, kind of all connected together to do one task, to do one thing.
Is that like one, like just using the internet? That would be an example.
I mean, not necessarily like using the internet. They're trying to do things that take and require a lot of power, a lot of processing power. And like I say, it's kind of hard to...
Maybe like a telescope.
Where you
going? Well, I have an example, but like there's like a super computer trying to figure out like pi that's actually, because you know how there's like, you know, different things or like an end or a continuous?
Mm-hmm.
So they're trying to figure out like if there is an ending point to like pi. So like the computer has been going on for like, I don't know. I heard 50 years, but actually I don't really know.
So yeah, so and I know it sounds like we're like, why would you use this powerful computer to figure out numbers and things like that? But that's just science, research requires that kind of power to be able to figure out these numbers. Also, like some people, bad people are kind of forming these supercomputers to figure out like passcodes and crack passcodes.
Mm-hmm.
So it's different, various reasons. You're going to say something?
No, I was going to say, like, if they wanted to hook up to the Range Rover or the item that just landed on Pluto or whatever, those are the kind of computers they use to relate back and forth to get the pictures and stuff.
Yes.
When they land on the moon and they've got the rover roaming around.
Definitely.
So this kind of computer would be supercomputer.
Supercomputer, definitely. Because it takes a lot of power, you know what I mean? A lot of research, a lot of... CPU power to be able to communicate, talk, you know, over
so that computer would actually hook up to the satellite would pick up the signal. I mean, through like Wi-Fi or whatever wireless.
Through their connection. Yeah. It's not going to be like the public kind of Wi-Fi that we use, like their own private access line. Yeah, for sure. And then. So this is the Titan, which is the one in the book. But this one, I like this picture. It shows you like the depth of this supercomputer. Like all of this is connected together to do something. Like that's a lot of processing power that's going into like this one task. So just kind of showing you like, you know, actually what a supercomputer is and what it looks like.
Is that fiber optic? Is there fiber optic in there?
You mean like the cables that's connecting it? Yeah, so it's like the regular cat. Yeah. And this one is the Tahini. I don't know how you pronounce it. So this one, but it loses to another machine created by Chinese government. And this one is the number one biggest, more profitable computer ever created, boasting more than 10 million processor cores, almost tripling 93 petaflops. Yeah. Huh?
Who owns that computer?
China.
This one is China. Chinese.
So that's the one they're using to hack the stuff that they hack?
Huh?
Is that what they use to hack?
That's what
I don't know. I don't know what they use to hack. But yeah, that's the number one supercomputer. All right, so this just kind of shows you that. Okay, we'll do this real quick. A tablet computer is an example of a what? All right. True or false, the term mainframe computer and supercomputer are interchangeable. Both refer to the largest, most powerful computers. Okay, so I'm hearing some falses. A smartphone is an example of a what? All right, so that is portable computer, false. They're two totally different things. and that is a mobile device.
A mainframe we're not going to be tested on, you said, right?
No, no. All right, so I left off on slide 55, which means that you would want to read the rest of this chapter from this point on if you didn't read it already. But I'm not going to cover the rest of this chapter in lecture. Like on tomorrow during lecture, I'm going to cover chapter 2. So you want to finish chapter 1 and then start chapter 2. Start reading that. All right. If you guys have any questions, feel free to email me. Let me know. Second lab, we'll head over there. First lab, I'll see you guys tomorrow. Yes.